What's the highest price item you've ever sold on eBay?
I sold an $11,000 book, and that was really pretty sweet. It was from this collection, and it was a book that was a signed, limited, numbered, boxed book. And the book was The Gunslinger by Stephen King, inside a boxed set that was numbered. That came out probably in the mid-80s, 84, maybe 83, 84, 85. And so less than two decades later, I sold it for more than $11,000.
Hi, it's Michael Sinoff with Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Here's a special seminar on eBay. It's an interview with a gentleman named Greg. It's a three-part, three-hour intensive interview for information on how to sell using direct marketing techniques on eBay. Greg Perry has been teaching advanced eBay techniques for years. He's actually known as the world's most prolific computer book writer. He's written more books about computers published worldwide in every major language than anyone else on earth. After the 80th title, he stopped counting. He's even been featured on Penn and Teller's Showtime special, and his seminars have appeared on C-SPAN multiple times. In spite of all this, his primary passion is eBay. Greg writes a syndicated newspaper column about eBay and has written several advanced publications about eBay selling techniques. Unlike many writers and eBay book authors, Greg Perry practices what he teaches, having worked with eBay for more than 8 years and has been in the power seller status for most of that time. He and his wife run an eBay consignment business, and to show just how crazy he is about eBay, his wife, Janie Perry, recently wrote her first book entitled, I Married an eBay Maniac. Greg Perry wants to demonstrate that traditional and proven direct marketing techniques can and do the work on the eBay platform. I'm sure you've heard of eBay, but if you have not had a chance to sell through the auction format, you're really missing out. And in this interview, we are going to explore all kinds of ways to use direct marketing techniques to enhance the selling of products and services on eBay. eBay is how I got started in this entire business, and you are truly going to hear from an expert. In this recording, you're going to hear a few steps about new eBayers that will really get the ball rolling just the way you want to. You'll learn how to conduct research for an item and determine its price point in under 60 seconds. You'll learn how telling more to sell more can be combined with an action step to get that bid button pushed more often. You'll learn all about eBay's strict limitations on auctions and some proven strategies for getting around them. You'll learn how you can develop customer lists from your auctions and what to do with those lists once you've compiled them. You'll learn why you'll want to make sure you go international for all of your eBay listings. Look, if you're working with clients and they don't know about eBay, getting their products or services offered on eBay is the simplest and fastest way to start growing their business. And as HMA marketing consultants, you're going to find this seminar absolutely invaluable. So without further ado, let's get going. Learn how eBay power sellers power through profits using eBay. Go to www.ebaymarketingtipsandsecrets.com. That's www.ebaymarketingtipsandsecrets.com. Where did you get your direct marketing experience?
Oh, I tell you, my direct marketing and marketing experience, I consider myself a salesman more than anything now. And I believe any field that I were in, I would think that if I were a doctor, I've got to sell to customers. If I worked for a corporation as an accountant, I would have to sell my services to my boss every week in order to promote myself and get a better job. But I tell you, Michael, I hated marketing. I hated it my entire life. And after I got my undergraduate in computers, I got a master's degree. It was an MBA, and it was an emphasis in corporate finance. And the only courses I routinely hated were marketing courses. And I was a good student. I made almost straight A's. But those marketing courses were the ones that would routinely bring my 4.0 GPA down a few tenths with some B's in there. And as much as I hated those marketing classes and as little as I cared cared about them. I was really fortunate to get the B's instead of C's or worse, but imagine my surprise. If I'd looked forward and seen that I'm routinely interviewed and I write books about marketing now, I would have said, there's no way. But the big problem, if I think it through, was I really had an inherent disdain for soft subjects. I don't like psychology and philosophy because there's no one right answer or stuff. That's just not the way I'm wired. I truly believe there's such a thing as absolute truth, and the soft subjects have always really bugged me. And even in business classes, management, those classes were a problem for me for the same reason. And given the way I'm wired and how much I love direct marketing techniques now, I've become a direct marketing junkie, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners in hard-to-find seminars are also. I can't get my hands on enough material. And even those that don't even pertain to me, like you offer some hard-to-find seminar recordings that have absolutely no direct bearing on what I do in life and never will, and yet I still learn little juicy tips from those. But how I really got started in my direct marketing background to become this passionate guru who can't get enough of it now is really happenstance. I listened to a guy named Gary North. He writes a lot about economics. And once he told a guy about a man who he went and trained under named Jay Abraham and how anybody could sell anything if they learned some of Jay's techniques. And I had a vested interest in selling. Well, this was later on, late 1990s. That was when I was just starting eBay. And I just happened to be in a used bookstore that week after reading Dr. North's advice about Jay Abraham. And lo and behold, I found a Jay Abraham's, his X Factor seminar, and all of his tapes for $5.
There you go.
That's like 1,000 times less than it sold for new.
Right.
And I grabbed it, and I thought, well, for $5. And as I began listening, I was really hooked. It's funny, the X Factor recordings, they're super. They may not be Jay's very best, but there's something about them that really talks directly to me very quickly. And I've since gotten virtually everything he's done. I've always considered him the best, and it struck just the right chord that if I happened to get some of his other material before the X Factor, maybe that wouldn't have even happened. Something about that really turned me on. And I began getting other names that I learned about, Dan Kennedy and all the others, and I just made the tour through all the tapes, books, and videos that probably a lot of our listeners have done the same thing to, and the giants of the direct marketing industry.
For more interviews like this, go to hardtofindseminars.com.
The wonderful thing, Michael, our listeners, they don't have to spend a small fortune because you offer a tremendous amount of Abraham materials at just fractions of what they sell for elsewhere. Eventually, as much as I hated marketing concepts, I fell in love with direct marketing because it offers the benefits that traditional marketing doesn't, and you have feedback systems in place, and you measure exactly what works and so on. And even before I learned the power of direct marketing, I was already doing some of it on eBay. I would cross-reference auctions to promote other auctions, and if I was selling a rare Hemingway book, I'd be sure and tell in each listing all about the other Hemingway books I had at the same time, and I'm basically lazy. So I would always write very long listings. And the reason I did that is because I'm lazy, because I figured if I didn't do that, these buyers are going to write me and ask me, well, what does the front cover look like? Is it damaged? What's the copyright date? Is there a mark on it? Is someone written in it? And if I just told all of that up front, I never got an overabundance of questions about that. So I started just naturally because of my tendency to want to lower the clutter of work that I have. I started just telling all that I could in an auction. That's a very strong direct marketing technique. It turns out that the more you tell, the more you sell. And so I was kind of a natural to soak up all of these techniques. But I do want to point out one thing important. Although I am an author, a writer, although I've written thousands of eBay auctions among our numerous eBay accounts, I do not consider myself a good copywriter. If I had an information product that I was selling, I would always hire a good copywriter such as Ben Settle to write the copy or at least give me some feedback on it, because that's the great thing. You can implement a lot of direct marketing techniques and maximize your sales no matter what you sell. Whether you're really an expert or not, just knowing about them helps leverage what you do sell and separate you from the competition, especially on eBay.
Can you just tell the listeners a story in a nutshell how eBay got started?
There is some controversy, although the story that is known the best is that the founder of eBay had some, well, actually his wife had some Pez dispensers, those PEZ, those candy dispensers, and she wanted a way to sell those, and he started up a site. I think he called it East Bay Computers or eastbay.com, and he was a computer guy, and he'd worked on the framework of putting up an auction site. And when he went to buy the domain East Bay, or whatever it was similar to that, I think that was it, it was taken by someone else. And so he settled for eBay, probably thinking, this is a stupid name, it'll never fly. And the rest is history. He sold those Pez dispensers. As I say, that's the one story most people know the best. Far more than they expected, and they immediately built up a little community and started selling Beanie Babies, and he just thought, well, why are we limiting ourselves to little collectible items? Let's sell everything on eBay. And it just grew tremendously overnight.
Don't some people consider eBay to be too structured to utilize direct marketing techniques?
They certainly do. That's why if you and our listeners begin implementing even a few direct marketing techniques, everyone will blow away any competitor selling against them. And if you look at the typical sales letter web page on the Internet, a lot more people today are direct marketing savvy, at least in some respects, than ever before. And there's a long way to go. But the eBay listing is the perfect sales letter, giving you a screen with as much length as you need and any formatting that you want. And there are very few limitations that eBay imposes, but eBay's the perfect tool to implement many successful direct marketing techniques, but few do it. And I want to make it my personal passion to show people how well direct marketing techniques work on eBay. I like to say it this way. Critics will tell you that direct marketing techniques do not and cannot work on eBay, but direct marketers say critics make far less money than direct marketers make. And direct marketers understand that, and this might sound funny at first, the medium is not the message. Direct marketing works whether it's a newspaper ad, a magazine ad, a television ad, a telephone call, an eBay auction listing. I mean, to say that direct marketing doesn't work on eBay is an admission that you don't understand direct marketing. A group of concepts completely unrelated to whatever medium you use to sell your line. And I'll admit that at first eBay does seem limited for the direct marketer, but those limitations melt away as you look further, as we'll learn today. eBay's an incredible tool, and it allows you to do traditional direct marketing techniques. You can test, you can generate leads with loss leaders, you can upsell, you can do follow-up sales letters, you can do so much more. And we're going to get into a lot of those specifics. The big example of the fallacy, just one obvious one that direct marketing doesn't work, they say, is the 55-character limit that eBay puts on auction titles. With every auction, you put up a title, and that's what people search for. And once they click on your auction title, if they're interested in your stereo receiver or your laser printer or whatever you're selling, then it takes you to your listing where you have as much room as you want to describe that item. And the title only allows 55 characters. That's the max you can put in a title. And the naysayers say that 55 characters, that's not long enough to write an effective sales headline. So direct marketing never works on eBay, but they completely don't understand when they say that the auction title is not your headline. And a headline is always nice in an auction, but actually with some eBay auctions, and this goes against everything you've ever heard about direct marketing, sometimes you don't even need a headline. In general, if you use a headline, and it always helps, you have all the room in the world because your title is not there to be a headline. Your title is there to get found in the eBay search engine. And the top line in your actual eBay auction is where your headline should go. And eBayer with the name J-P-O-K-L-A, J-P Okla for a short for Oklahoma, is one of my favorite studies that has been written up in at least one book and on several websites. And I know J-P Okla very well, and I know her success story. She has a Kool-Aid story, and her Kool-Aid story shows how sweet eBay is in many ways. I once asked her to help my mother clean out some cupboards above my mother's oven. Mother needed some help, and I knew her very well because at the time, well, she's my wife, and she gladly helped. And when she got up there and saw all those things in my mom's cabinets, she was really taken aback. It was obvious that there were things that had been up there 30 years ago when my mom and dad moved into their home. Most of these things hadn't seen the light of day, and one item that Janie pulled out was an unopened pack of Funny Face powdered Kool-Aid drink mix. But they were just like the little Kool-Aid drink mixes that, you know, you loved as a kid. And these cost a dime back in the 60s. And I don't believe they've been sold for 30 years, maybe 40. But when Janie saw that drink packet, she saved it and brought it to me and showed, look how long your mom's kept things in these cabinets. And she had bought items on eBay but never sold anything. And after she left my mother's home, she greeted me with that, "You won't believe what I found today," and showed me that Funny Face Kool-Aid packet. And I said, "That's great. You should sell that on eBay." And she told me nobody in the world would look at an auction for a 10-cent pack of Kool-Aid from the 60s. And I told her, "Well, you need to do some research just to make sure." And her female curiosity was piqued. And so she went to eBay like she was buying some and did a search. And she found Funny Face items. Some went for like $20. And none of them were exactly like the one we had, but she thought more research was called for, so she searched Google, and she found that exact packet somewhere, not for sale, but described, and so she put some of that information, wrote it up for me, and she wrote up a description, and then I said, "That's a great first auction, let's add to it a little bit," and I modified it some with some direct marketing nuances that we'll learn about today, and some little action calls, and we took pictures, and we got that drink mix listed, and Janie was thrilled when she got her first bid, because she doubted anyone would even look at the auction, and she watched and watched. I think she went in there every hour for the next 7 days. That auction ended with a winning bid of $126.
Wow, $100 for a 10-cent packet of little Kool-Aid Funny Face. That's incredible. These are the stories I love about eBay.
I agree. Don't listen to the naysayers who say eBay's old technology or the market's saturated, and especially that direct marketing doesn't work. Just don't let the naysayers tell you there's nothing new under the sun on eBay. There's a gigantic, powerful monster called direct marketing that your competitors on eBay certainly should use, but they don't. And even though it offers a few minor limitations to the direct marketer, they're negligible. They're not really a major factor.
What are some of those minor limitations that make people believe eBay can't be used for direct marketing?
eBay's relatively open to anything as far as formatting and text goes, but eBay does have strict limitations on what you can include on an auction page. For example, you can't put a link to your own webpage in an auction. That's a pretty serious limitation. They don't even like you putting email links in your auction, like click here and ask me a question, although they don't seem to mind too much that you do that, but they prefer that you don't. And having no web addresses makes it difficult to route them off eBay, but that's an understandable limitation. If I owned eBay, I'd probably require that also, that someone can't easily send someone from my site to another site where they can buy something. But the lack of an email link that's real obvious makes it difficult to add people to a mailing list you want to join a newsletter or that you want to send more information to. And there are easy ways around both of those. Even though the lack of web addresses mean that you can't have affiliate links in auctions to entice people to click on them, and just all the things that a lot of direct marketers really like to spice up their listings with, it turns out that eBay offers a way to do all of that. It's one step removed, but it's a way. eBay allows you to have what many people call an About Me page, and there you're free to include a lot more information. And you must admit, on an auction page, eBay says, "Look, you're there to sell one item. We don't want you to confuse our buyers with lots of other things, just one item. But we will allow you to put a link to your About Me page. And there you can tell about yourself. You don't have to sell anything. You can have a link to your store website or anything else you want. You cannot have a link to one specific product's sell page. But other than that, we're pretty free with what you can link to." And so you should encourage people to read about you, learn more about you, maybe entice them with a free downloadable ebook or something, and send them to your About Me page. And there you can tell them all about yourself, offer a newsletter link if you have an informative. I'm really big on, if you send out email newsletters, really pack it with information, make it information heavy. You can try to get them on that list. The only big problem with all of the eBay rules, a lot of them are cloudy that you'll find, and some of that cloudiness might be intentional. Maybe they can police what they want to police when they want to police it. And as long as you don't really abuse any of the privileges, you'll generally be fine. And eBay's real good about warning you, saying, "We don't like that link. We're going to pull that auction, by the way, and refund your listing fees, but don't do it again, but all's well, you know, you're forgiven." As long as you don't do that too many times, you can accidentally break the rules. So you may learn things without even realizing that you're going to learn it. But in general, your listings are to sell one thing, and you can route people to an About Me page where you can do a whole lot more. But eBay has just started offering what they call classified ads that show up in the search engine, and they act a lot as an auction listing acts, except there's no auction. It's not even a sell. eBay has kept the rules really open. So far, they've allowed email links, even newsletter signups. You can send people to a web page from that page. And so the classified ads are giving the direct marketer a little more freedom to try some things they couldn't try before. But one thing I'd really recommend is that direct marketers know how important your customer list is. And eBay provides you with all the data you need when an auction ends. And you can capture your buyer's name and email and address. And for eBay storefronts, and those are a fee-based group of web pages that you can have on eBay, that you can keep all of your auctions and fixed price items under one general web page storefront. It's still eBay, but it's more organized and you have more freedom with what you can do. eBay store owners can even have a newsletter and an email tool that eBay manages, where eBay encourages people to sign up for a newsletter and you can send them all you want, sales flyers. The problem with that is that the eBay managed newsletters severely limit you. You cannot easily include web addresses and links, and that's not a huge drawback, but you should really be managing your own mailing lists anyway. And as long as you've done business with someone, as long as someone's bid and won an item, eBay considers that your customer. And you can send that person email. You should be collecting all of those names and emails from past buyers for certain. And eBay doesn't mind you contacting as long as you've done business with them and have a relationship with those buyers. You aren't limited to selling eBay items only after that. You can put whatever you want in your email list, but the general email courtesy rules apply. You never spam someone who hasn't done business with you before. You always provide an easy-to-remove link where anybody can get off your list immediately. You never use their names and addresses for anything other than that one purpose. But if you go the email route, and you should, just make sure that you send buyers information first, as I said before. If you want to sell something in there, that's fine. You can pepper it a little bit. But I'm on several lists of direct marketers. Many are now promoting eBay things, and their newsletters have gone, oh, Michael, from about 90% information to about 90% promotion of items and sales and affiliates. And I rarely even read them anymore. I just subscribe to them just because I like to monitor what others are doing. And I really want to encourage people that when they have customers, really give them, as you do, Michael, you're the king of this. Overload your customers with helpful information, advice, tips, services. Make them really value what you're doing for them, because then they trust you, and the few times that you do offer something that they could use, that is valuable, that is worth the money to them, that is an important item, then they will trust you. In order to have your own mailing list, they're very easy. There are newsletter sites like newsletterease.com that will even help you create your newsletter. Autoresponders like sendfree.com or aweber.com, which is one of my favorites. Just look in Google for autoresponders and you'll find websites that help you manage email lists. And I have found them, except in a certain circumstance I'll tell you about later. In general, those are wonderful for managing your lists. And so direct marketers, they have a wonderful opportunity on eBay.
Well, let's say we've got a listener and he's really got his juices going and he's looked up in the attic and he's got some antiques there. He's got some things that, hey, I think I may want to try and sell this on eBay. What's the most important first step you would tell that person before he implements a direct marketing product for eBay?
Well, okay, you found an antique. The first step is to search and research. Remember that 10-cent pack of funny face we were talking about? We have many old antique items that we bought in a garage sale. Maybe they were only $20 that we're just going to make a killing on eBay, and we get home, and there's 1,000 of them up there, and they're not getting any bids for whatever reason. So unless you're an antique dealer or you know a certain market, I know the rare book market very well. So when I spot a rare book that's valuable, I know it, and I can tell. But most things I can't do that to, and so I have to research, and I have to look at past sales of items. I have to look at past price points. What should I expect as a range of income? And always throughout the top and always throughout the bottom, because you're going to be somewhere in that range in between. I look for other people who have sold an item successfully that I have. I look for hints in their titles and in their descriptions, maybe some things that actually triggered a buy or a sale that others didn't have. And all of those just get my juices flowing to decide whether I'm going to sell that item on eBay or how to approach it. Sometimes you use a little spycraft. Every once in a while, my wife will be at a garage sale and see something, and she'll call me and ask me, what do you think about this item at $17? And I'll just look it up real fast if the computer's on and say yes or no, I think that's a possibility. And if it's very inexpensive, it's a buck or two, I would say don't even do that. Just buy it, because what's the risk? But if it's much money to you, you need to do some research. Always remember when you're searching that eBay searches only auction titles and not the description by default. So say a seller didn't predict what you would search for, then an item for sale that you're looking for might not even appear on the search results. Let's say you have an iPod and you want to protect it with a case. And so you search for iPod case on eBay. And if you do that, you're going to find hundreds. But if someone is selling the very case you want to buy or maybe the very case you want to sell, and the auction's title says, protect your iPod with this great item, well, that auction's not going to appear in your search because the title is being misused. However, if you can keep that in mind when you're looking up items, if you search both titles and descriptions, which there's a little click mark you can do that, then that auction would have shown up. You'll get a lot more search results, but you'll also get a lot more results. Sometimes we look for some old antique item and never find it, but when we search for item and description, it comes up because the buyer may have called it a wood stove and we called it a cook stove, and so it just never came up.
Learn how eBay power sellers power through profits using eBay. Go to www.ebaymarketingtipsandsecrets.com. That's www.ebaymarketingtipsandsecrets.com. Do you know what the stats are on the eBay community, what percentage are clicking on when they're doing their searches for title and description compared to just title only?
I do know that. As of a couple of years ago, and there's no doubt it's the same, under 1%.
Under 1% are clicking for descriptions?
Yes.
Wow.
Because that's the default. You search for something and only searches descriptions. eBay does that, I think, to keep their server service down, where they don't have to have all their servers looking through every word of every auction. But less than 1%. And I tell you, Michael, if I think of all the times I've searched on eBay, I would say I do it one out of every couple of hundred times.
Right.
Because most of the time I find what I want from the title only. Most of the time. But when I don't, oh, man, I click that description also because I know that eBay's too huge not to have sold what I have to sell. I mean, that's extremely rare that something that you're selling hasn't sold for the past 30, 45 days on eBay. Extremely rare.
All right, I want you to do this. Tell the listeners specifically what to do. Let's say your wife is at a garage sale, and she sees a Nokia 220 cell phone, and she calls you and says, Greg, I got this Nokia 220 cell phone. Can you go do the research on this phone on the eBay market? Tell me what you're going to do when you sit down in front of your computer. How are you going to conduct your research in under 60 seconds? And then what are you going to tell your wife once you've done that?
Very good. First of all, my wife, if I'm doing the opposite and I'm at the sale, we're not real obvious about what we're doing. We'll go off to the side and say, is this something you were looking for? And we don't tell the garage sale, the yard sale owner, we're going to look this up on eBay and see if we want it. So use a little discretion, and she'll call. And if it is a cell phone, a Nokia 220, she may just say it's a Nokia cell phone, or I may tell her that. And the first thing we need to ask the other is, well, what's the model number? Because that's very important. We would get thousands of Nokia cell phones, but we want to know about the 220 cell phone. So then I would go to eBay.com, and I would type in the search box that is on every single eBay page, so there's no excuse not to find it. On every page, there's a search here box, and I would type Nokia space 220, and I'd hit enter. I wouldn't even search for the letters cell phone, because probably Nokia 220 is going to find most of the listings. And if I put cell phone in the title, maybe some of the sellers put cell phone as all one word, and others put them as two words, and I just may not hit all those. So if I just keep it as simple as possible, Nokia 220, and I'm searching only the titles to begin with, I get a much quicker response that way, and I'll get a good thumbnail view as to whether it's worth it. I then will click completed items.
Why are you going to look on the existing auctions first? What information are you looking when you see the results from the search there? And then why are you going to go to the completed and tell me what new information you'll find there that you won't see on your first search of existing auctions that have not completed?
Of course. If I find 1,000 auctions that are currently going and most of them have zero bids, that tells me all I need to know. Probably that's not worth buying even $4 or $5.
Can you sort that page?
You can sort that page by auctions ending first, auctions ending last, highest current bidding price, lowest current winning bidding price.
How do you do it?
Well, you search for highest bidding price first. First of all, I'll just get a thumbnail overview. And if it's all zero, I oftentimes don't even go further. I don't know. Maybe I should, but it's just a gut reaction. If the first page, which will be maybe 150 items, are not going for much, I just say, don't mess with it. It's not worth the risk. But if there's some activity there, then I will sort by price, and I want to know what they're really going for. And if several of them, and by several, if there are 1,000 of them for sale, and 25 are selling for 20 or 30 or 40 bucks or higher, that's going to interest me. And at that point, I'm going to click on completed items to see what they routinely sell for. It's just another option on that same page that you click and then click search again, or just click search and it will search again, and it will tell you what they have actually sold for, because before I was looking at the current auctions, now I'm looking at the completed auctions, and that will help verify. I don't even sort them first. I just look and see, is $20, $30, $40, and I'm just saying, assuming she could buy it for, say, $5, that would be a pretty good profit. Is that reasonable to expect? Do those prices appear even on the first results page of the ones that have most recently sold? And if so, or if they're close, or even half that, then I will start searching by price. All of this, by the way, you can do in seconds. Maybe not the first time you do it, but the fifth time you do it, in seconds, you have all this information. It's just a glance and a glance and a click and a sort and a glance, and that tells me what I need to know. And as the less than 1%, I probably, in that case, wouldn't search the descriptions.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. So what you're searching for is action. You're searching to see, is there a market for this Nokia 220 cell phone? And by looking at the completed auctions, you see that they are selling. By the time your wife buys that cell phone, you've got pretty good evidence, and statistically, that's money in the bank even before you put that listing up.
That is all I want.
You're reducing your risk by doing the research.
Reducing the risk. I want to know if there's a market out there. I like a large market. I like a fluid market, or they say a liquid market. I like a market where things buy and sell often and in large quantities. Now, I don't care for the salt and pepper commodity types of things, but otherwise, you know, I want my item to sell. Or, Michael, if she found a lamp that is some old flowery lamp in very good condition, and she finds the maker and sees that it's from the Victorian age, and I look that up and I find nothing, that also piques my interest. And it's higher risk, but if there are not 50 or even 20 of those lamps for sale on eBay, they might be extremely rare. And that's possible. And on eBay is so large, it's not always probable, but there have been many things we sold that we were the only one selling them at that time. And again, I told you I sell a lot of rare books, and my rare books have sometimes done that, where I'll be the only one selling a certain title that's considered a classic or a limited edition. And so having no hits, and it's an item that's not just a run-of-the-mill everyday item, that interests me enough, maybe even to search Google just to see what I can find about it. And I might find some other website just by searching Google that sells that item for $100 or $1,000 or $10,000. And so zero hits on eBay should also pique your interest.
How about when you do your search in the completed auctions, tell the listeners what this number is on the number of bids and how that information can also determine some important things about the market.
Yeah, if an item ends, whether there are a lot of them or not very many of them, every Tuesday the movie industry releases new movies on DVD. Every Tuesday. That's the only day they release DVDs. And every Tuesday, you'll see scores of DVDs. They're the same title. This week was Fantastic Four, number two. And there were DVDs galore up there. And if you looked at them, most of them had bids, and some of them had a lot of bids. And it makes you wonder, what are people thinking? Because there are several that don't have any bids. Why not go down there and start bidding on that at a lower price? But people get into a frenzy sometimes. And if they've sold before and had a lot of bidders, and a lot of bidders is relative depending on the product. DVDs, they usually have 20 or 30 or 40 bidders every time they sell for new DVDs. And if I see that, and versus another DVD, I'm kind of eclectic, and we buy new DVDs every once in a while and watch them and take care of them and sell them on eBay. I try to get them up there that same week that they're brand new. And sometimes I can't find other people wanting that DVD. I can find completed auctions where maybe there was one bidder and it went for the minimum bid. And that's bad. And that tells me I do not want to put that DVD up there for auction. I want to put it at a fixed price of $9.99 or $14.77. If it gets very little activity, even if many have sold, but just for one or two bidders each, I don't want to raise that price. I don't want two bids to win my item and they get it for 99 cents or $1.50 or something, because I like to start my bidding low. So one or two bidders tells me this is not a heavy item, but people do want it. And so I'm going to offer them a deal over Amazon. It's been open. It's in mint condition, but it's been open. And I'll probably undercut Amazon 70% and just put it up as a fixed price item, not an auction. And I got that information just by what you just said, Michael. I'm looking at the number of bidders per item on the average. And this isn't something I run through an Excel worksheet. I mean, this isn't high mathematics. It's just a glance through to kind of determine this information.
Should sellers open their auctions to the international eBay community, foreign bidders, or should they stick to the simpler sell to your own country practice? What's your opinion and advice on that?
Well, it kind of goes hand in hand with advice I have about timing your auctions. You get conflicting advice. Sometimes people will say, be sure and time your auction when everyone's going to be on eBay. Sunday nights are the best. This is what the general consensus is. And certainly Sunday nights has a lot of eBay activity. But the problem is, this is a global economy. Everyone in the world now has access to a computer. There are internet cafes in third world countries. Actually, quite a few of them in third world countries. And so new timers to eBay, whether you've had a lot of experience or not, you should open your market to foreign buyers. Every time you list something on eBay, you can click list only to my country or sell to the world. And you can even select countries and say, I want to ship to Europe and Canada, and that's all, other than America, if you're selling from America. And so you can limit that. But America buys and sells about a third of all products on eBay, and that's a huge market share, but that means there are two-thirds of the world left to sell to. And why would you just limit your customer base to one-third of its potential? People worry about shipping overseas. They worry about timing. Well, at any given time, someone's asleep somewhere in the world. And so you really cannot end your auction where it's good for everybody. You can kind of time it where it's best for your country, and maybe if you're an English-speaking country, England and Australia, you want to time it where maybe they're still awake, but you can't always do that. It's just difficult. And so timing isn't as much of an issue if you're an international seller as it used to be, because you just can't time it for everyone. But I do want to say shipping overseas to mail things, very, very simple now. Almost as easy as shipping to another state. Currently, as we speak, the dollar has been weaker and weaker and weaker, and that's an advantage in a way when you're a seller, because our products, the things we sell on eBay, are very cheap for international buyers. And the extra shipping they have to pay, well, that's more than made up for by the money exchange, the money they save due to the dollar weakness against all the world currencies. So shipping is not a big cost factor for international buyers, and it's very simple. I use an electronic shipping service. I use Endicia.com. That's spelled Endicia.com. Endicia.com. There's also Stamps.com that I used to use. It's a little bit more limited. And you can even print international mailing labels from PayPal. If your buyer pays with PayPal, and PayPal fills in everything. You just click a few clicks, and it prints a label. And if you don't have a label, it prints it on a white piece of paper that you tape to your box. And the package is ready to go. It's got the postage and everything. It's really unbelievable.
What advantages are you seeing through Endicia compared to Stamps.com, just in a nutshell, compared to the post office?
Well, compared to the post office, either of those programs, Stamps.com or Endicia, first of all, you have all of your customers that you've mailed to right there in your address book. I don't believe that's on the online postal service website where it keeps track of your names and addresses. And so anytime that I need to contact a customer, I just go to that database. I always keep my Endicia.com program. It's actually a program that runs on your computer, even though they're a website. And I keep that open at all times. If a buyer asks me a question about something that we've sold to him or her, we will look up the buyer's name and email and see when we shipped it and when it arrived and just kind of get a feel for that shipping item. So I like the data that's always there. Another thing that I really like about Endicia is it's great for direct marketing, because not only does it keep track of all that name and addresses and print reports that are just amazing that you can export to Excel and database programs, but Endicia is a blast because you can print your own custom messages on the envelope or on the package's mailing label, and you can choose fonts and colors and outlines, and you can promote a website, you can promote a sale you're currently offering, and I promote the insurance service that I use, which is DSI Insurance. It's a great shipping insurance company for eBayers and very, very cheap. Your post office will charge you $2.30, I think, to insure a package up to $100. And with DSI Insurance, I think it costs you 45 cents, something like that.
You know, let's say I'm selling my pre-owned J. Abraham stuff or my home products. I could use Endicia.com that's integrated with software, a database, database management. You can export the files into text files, CSV files, all in one, just like a Excel-type program?
All in one. And the only drawback that some people think there is there's a charge for that. There's a monthly fee of $15.95 is what I pay. There's a toned-down service for $9.95, but we send far more packages than that every month. And that $15.95 buys you some things that actually now the post office is beginning to offer, too. You get free delivery confirmations. You don't have to pay the extra 40 cents or whatever that costs. And you always need to ship with delivery confirmation now, I'm convinced, because you get buyers that say, I never received something. We get this a lot more often than you would think, that people say, you never sent this, we never received it. We go to Indicia.com. It's very easy to just say, give me a status, and it says, this package was delivered at 4 p.m. 3 weeks ago. And we write to people and say, well, the post office says it was delivered. And I don't think any of them, at least so far, are trying to pull something over our eyes. They have always, 100% of the time now, this is probably 45 times now, have written back and said, oh, my daughter brought in the box, or my wife brought in the box, or my husband, or they're in a store and they didn't see it. So that's great to be able to get that feedback. I really love being able to customize my own mailing labels. As long as I don't violate the Postal Service's address requirements, I can move my messages around, I can move my return address, I can make it larger, smaller. You don't have all of that freedom on the postal website, and you certainly don't have that freedom if you just put stamps on what you mail or take it to the post office and have them do it there.
Are you printing on a mailing label, or do you have a choice, a mailing label, you can print a postcard on an actual cardstock, you know, 4 up on a cardstock, 8.5 by 11 piece of paper? What options do they have that you're printing your address on?
Yes to all of the above.
You can do postcard mailings with it?
Postcard mailings, that.
Are they charging you standard U.S. postal card rates, or are you paying a little bit more?
No. You pay exact rates, unless you're shipping overseas, and they give you a discount.
Do you pay for your postage up front?
You buy it in chunks. You can buy $10 a head or $100 a head or $200 a head, and we always just max it out because we ship so many boxes through eBay that we just keep $200 in there, and it just deducts from our credit card. Yeah, I even print envelopes with it. And it'll print the whole envelope with postage on the envelope. I just put the envelope in my printer. I never fill out an envelope anymore. And I even hate it when I get an envelope that's pre-printed because I have to write my name and address on the thing. You know, it's like that's more trouble than it's worth these days. I have to lick a stamp and put it on there. But it does all of that. By the way, both Stamps.com and Indicia, I find them far easier to use than USPS.com, than the postal website's postage-generating system. First of all, I already have the names and addresses, and in Indicia, the program I use, you'll get an email after an auction ends with the buyer's name and address, and if I copy that name and address to my Windows clipboard, Indicia's always looking for name and address. Anytime I copy a name and address to my Windows clipboard, Indicia pastes it in the middle of whatever label I currently have open or whatever envelope is currently open. I don't even have to do insert paste. It just does it automatically.
What if you copy and paste multiple?
Well, in that case, you want to export. You want to put those in Excel or some sort of a program and export them to a comma-separated database or a text file and then import those into Indicia. Anybody who sells a lot on eBay really owes it to themselves to reduce their efforts by this. And you can also take all of these packages to the post office, walk up in front of the line, get the postman's eye, get the clerk's eye, and just put them on the counter and walk away. We do that because we know the postal clerks. If you don't know them, it may take a while for them to get used to you doing that. But now they just see us walk in the door and they say, put them over here. And as long as we've caught their eye, because we want them to know that those boxes are there, we don't want someone else walking off with them. But it's so much better than standing in line. And we ship overseas all the time. That's another huge advantage that Indicia gives you that the postal website doesn't. And that Stamps.com, at least up until a year ago, didn't. I haven't checked since then. Indicia even does all of the customs forms for you. It just says, okay, now that you've put in the name and address, put an item description, put what it weighs, and put all those little custom clicks. You click whether it was sold as merchandise or as a gift. I state legally that this is not dangerous goods, and you just click that, and it prints all of your customs form for you, too.
So let's say you're shipping a package over a pound, and it's going overseas. You enter it all in. Will it print out 3 copies of the custom form that you got to put in a clear envelope, like with the post office sign?
We'll do that, and we don't do that because there are new forms now that Indicia.com is legally allowed to use. I want to state again, it would be wonderful if Stamps.com can now do this, but they couldn't before, that in one form, it has both customs and the postage and the address and return address all on one little form.
One form that you tape to the box.
And if you have labels, slap the label on. Otherwise, you print it on one piece of paper, cut it in half because it's small. You don't have all those forms anymore.
Oh, wow. So I can eliminate all my clear pouches and the multiple forms.
Almost. If it's over 4 pounds, then you've got that problem. And so Indicia says, I'll just print all those four forms for you. So you have to get the little plastic pouch to put them in, and that's it. You just print them out, stick them in, and you can legally even put an invoice in there. So if we often will wrap a box and forget to put an invoice in it if it's overseas, and that's very important. We have some standard things that we put in boxes a lot of times that we're shipping to buyers here in our own country, but for overseas, a lot of that doesn't apply. And it's good to always put an invoice in your box. And sometimes I'll forget and I'll have to open the tape. But in those pouch forms, if you're mailing a heavy box, you can put sales letters in there and invoices. As long as it's behind the customs form information, you can legally pack that full of stuff and they don't care.
Are you taping your postage information to your package, or is it a peel and stick label?
We taped for the first several thousand and just got tired of it. And so now we buy labels, and we buy them from uline.com, which is, I think, the cheapest place on earth for that type of thing. But we buy them in boxes of thousands. We buy about 2,000 labels at one time.
How big of a label?
The label is one half sheet of an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper.
And does it go in your laser jet printer?
It goes in our laser jet printer, and we also have an inkjet printer it will work in if we want color for some reason. They're great. And that's the standard label. If you go to ups.com and print a label, it prints on those labels. If you go to fedex.com, it prints on those labels.
So are there two per page or one per page?
Two per page. And we load it, and it prints it, and then I put it back in the printer facing the other direction for the next label.
Okay, and then you just peel it off.
Yeah, peel it off and stick, and that's so much better than pasting.
So you don't need scissors, and you don't need to tape.
No.
Great.
But if you're just starting off, don't buy a bunch of labels. Make sure it works well for you. Go ahead and scissor and tape it for a while.
That's the end of part one. Please continue to part two.